You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We're going to have a great time this morning talking about finding things that you want to do versus things that you think you ought to do. And we have with us Julie LaCroix, who the founder of Career Lab, to talk with us about what that means in terms of jobs and careers and all those things that we do in our world. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you, Will. Thanks for having me.
Well, super. So tell us a little bit about what Career Labs is before we get into talking about this motivation for people.
Sure. Well, Career Lab is a monthly workshop that I offer. And it's free to the community of professionals in Orange County or from wherever they want to travel. And I get together for a couple of hours and I talk to people about career pathing problems, questions about how to find what they want to be doing versus what they think they ought to be doing and how to go about it and what the resume strategies are. And then also in Career Lab, I offer a ton of resources. I have a self-directed set of guidebooks. I've got, you know, career counseling individually you can do with me. I've got a podcast called Career Lab. So Career Lab's really kind of an incubator for taking what I do in my private practice and getting it out to the community, to the masses, so that a larger audience can benefit from some of the things I've learned from my clients over the years.
Well, excellent. What are some of the things that you cover on your podcast?
Oh, in my podcast, I take individual callers. So anybody who's confused about where they are in their career and what their next step should be calling into Career Lab, getting some free career counseling. It's a lot of fun. We just kind of do some spot work. And what I try to do is I try to take their problem and kind of yank it out of their personal context and show the rest of the callers, the rest of the listeners, how it relates to common problems and universal problems and how to overcome some of those barriers. It's really fun.
Well, you know, goodness, how many years ago, maybe 30 years ago, I was struggling. I didn't really see a future in what I was doing. And I went down to, I was on the East Coast in Massachusetts, and went down to Hartford and met with Robert Half Associates, right? And And at that point, what I was doing in my head was thinking about jobs. You know, what jobs are there out there that I could get into? And now, what I'm hearing from you, and what is true for me as well, is there's a big difference in getting a job and finding a purpose, finding what I'm called to do, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And people put the cart before the horse and start looking outside for the right job to fit into. And it's actually the other way around. It's exactly what you just described. It's understanding yourself a little bit more in the context of occupational pathways and then entering those pathways, given your purpose, for sure.
And now, what's the effect? What's the difference between having a job and living out my purpose?
Oh, I think everything. It can be anything as small as just kind of isn't scratching my itch, to something major like I am so misaligned, I have depression or anxiety or money problems or marital problems and stress, and I've seen everything in between. So misalignment in career, in my opinion, is not something that you want to constantly be eliminating, misalignment in career.
Well, now, it seems to me that the employer, the company, the leadership team, have a responsibility in that as well, in terms of defining clearly what that particular job is responsible for. Is that fair?
I think it's fair, and I have a very different perspective on that, and I don't think my perspective is very popular on that. I think that the human resources professionals do a pretty darn good job of utilizing the occupational pathing resources that are available to create mobility tracks for professionals that make sense and that are pro-skill development down certain channels. They can only do so much, though. The responsibility, where I have a little bit of a different perspective, is I believe that the companies, for the most part, are doing what they should or what they could be doing. And the responsibility lies on the individual to seek out career counseling or go visit your college career counseling center if you're still in school, or take some online assessments, or read some good books, or come to a career lab, or listen to a show like this to really learn how to introspect about what parts and pieces of your own personal self in the areas of what work is to you, what leisure activities are to you, and what academic interests are to you, and figure out a way to create a collective purpose and build a skill set in that direction. So I kind of think that companies do a great job. It's people that don't. They think that the responsibility lies on something outside of them, and I don't believe that. I believe in free will and capitalism, and we got to figure it out for ourselves.
Well, one of the things that I help companies do is as we create what we call an accountability chart versus an org chart. And what we're looking at is, what are the processes that need to happen for this company to achieve its vision? And then once we have that set of seats or boxes, then we want to, you know, I want them to put in 5 to 7 things that that box is responsible for achieving, the results. No names. These are only, you know, no people in it yet. This is just this box, this seat, and this set of roles. Then what we want to do is ask 3 things if somebody wants to be in that seat. We want to know. And before we even talk about the seat, we want to know, do they fit the company values? Do you agree with the company values? That's a huge qualifier or disqualifier. So assuming they hit the they agree with the company values, then do they get where the company's going? They understand what we're trying to do here. They understand the vision, our target, what we're trying to accomplish. And then, do they really want to do this job? Do they bounce out of bed in the morning wanting to do it? And then, do they have the capacity, the God-given capability for doing this job? And it's only if they fit those 3 qualifiers that the company should allow them into that seat. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's a really, really great order of creating a method for seating the right candidate. Imagine a perfect scenario, Will, where that company had that wonderful method that you just described, and the individual had gone through a similar method from this side, where they had done some self-evaluation about what their core skill set potential is in the first place. Are they more of a people person, relationships and interpersonal dynamics, collaboration, teamwork? Are they just more of a communicator? Are they more of a data and organization person? Are they more of a working with things person? Are they more of an ideas person? Just in general, which of those 4 buckets would a person generally fit in if they were to have to develop skills and then come with some idea of how they can add value given that potential skill set? If they could just do that basic shaping and come to the format that you just laid out, I think that you would have a wonderful opportunity for somebody at that company who has interviewed the candidate to figure out if that's the right job, or maybe there's a job closely related in the company that they would fit into if they like the person's value set and if the person aligns from a values perspective. From career pathing on the individual side, on the candidate side, values are often a primary decision maker for people, but they shouldn't be, in my opinion. They should be when you get to be older, when you get to be more mature, when you have your skill set already built. A younger person and a mid-level person should be moving forward with a combination of what work they're interested in and what skills they're building, because that's what optimizes a worker, is building skills in an area that they're incredibly interested and engaged in. So then from the worker standpoint, then the value system comes into play. So if you can get a candidate who is aligned in career from, I know what I want to do because I'm interested in it, and I know what I'm good at because this is my skill potential, and then they walk into that interview, I think you've got a match.
Yeah. Well, at least you have the ability to make an honest, clear, transparent, effective decision.
Right. That's the thing, is that a lot of people who don't who haven't done the introspection, they're not sure what to say or how to say it, or they think they're going to say the right. There is no wrong answer. It's the you answer. That's what you need to present in an interview. Do the work and tell them who you are and how you can help.
Well, what I've said to people, now I've worked, I'm certainly not a professional in this field, but when I work with people at the Salvation Army Rehabilitation Center, as we are helping them, this is a Working Wardrobes program, as we're helping them move forward back into the marketplace. What I ask them to do is, rather than come in and wait for somebody to ask me questions, begin by asking them questions. I mean, what do you want to accomplish in this job? And really what I'm doing is asking them to see if they can tease out what are the 5 or 7 roles and responsibilities that this particular position has. What is it that looks like success to you? What do would I have to accomplish for you to feel like you had gotten what you wanted? Because then we're really hearing from the interviewer what the job is about.
Right. And you hear how they perceive it.
Yes.
And that's key.
Yes. And I also tell them, you know, they are interviewing you, but you are also interviewing them. They're trying to figure out whether they want to hire you, and you are trying to figure out whether you want to work for them.
That is, there's a whole model and theory that we could go deep into on that right there, which is the balance of fit between a candidate and an employer.
Yeah, well, to me, the you know, when I work with companies, they're not startups. They're not going out and hiring 30 people tomorrow.
Right.
They generally have 10, 20, 30, 40, or 150 people. And what I want them to do is to get to this picture of the accountability chart without any names in it. So when we begin, I tell them, nobody has a job here. As a leadership team, you got to be like a board for a moment and
right.
look at what the processes are that have to happen in this organization to accomplish the goals, the vision. Then, as you're looking at these places, look at what needs to happen. And now, as we begin to put names in it from the people that are there, we're asking ourselves, we use a little simple, very simple tool called People Analyzer to, you know, do they fit the values? And if they don't, that doesn't mean that they're out. That means that we have a conversation about how do we help you if you want to. If you want to become these, you know, want to exhibit these kind of values, how can we go about doing that and helping them to develop that? And if they don't, then we can help them, you know, what I tend to say is make them available to the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, first, do you fit the values? And then let's look at what the position that you're in right now. Do you get it? Do you want it? And do you have the capacity for that? And that becomes a process, a conversation. Reviews, quarterly reviews, have to do with, are you happy with what you're doing? Are you
right.
doing what you want to be doing? And are you fulfilling the requirements of the position? And since they're laid out, there's no surprises.
Right, exactly. And a leadership team who's been trained, and it sounds like you trained them well, to have these conversations in a non-confrontational, non-intimidating way can really lead to some growth and development of the individual to reflect on what work activities they've been assigned, if they do enjoy the most or don't enjoy the most, because sometimes we're really good at something, but we don't necessarily enjoy it, and that can lead to a feeling of burning out, whereas sometimes we're maybe slightly influenced or slightly given a tiny opportunity to do something, but you realize, wow, if that were my job, I'd really enjoy that. And the chance for, in a performance review, for an employee to really speak up and speak globally about their experiences over the last 6 or 12 months is a wonderful opportunity for management to kind of take an x-ray of what the developing skill set is for that individual and pass them along.
Well, and what the process that I not hope, but I see happening in the conversations I have with business owners and leadership teams is it moves from a top down, this is what you have to do,
right.
to tell me, here's the vision, here's what the company wants to do, here's where we as a leadership team are leading the company. What part of that do you want to be part of?
Yeah, that's a wonderful way to help candidates and employees fearlessly try things that they know that they have an aptitude for. And that's a wonderful way for a company to find hidden gems.
Well, what I've discovered is that when a company is telling people what they have to do, when that's the predominant management thrust, the management pattern, that I believe, my experience is, they're losing about 50% of the creativity and productivity in their employees.
Well, I think tapping an individual's creativity is almost always a piece of the recipe of burnout. And a younger person, they're happy just to have work a lot of times and just to be building skills. A mid-career person can hit a plateau and sometimes it's simply, I've built a skill set that I'm very proud of. I've got 10 years under my belt, but I feel like my creativity is thwarted a little bit. And then, you know, later in career, in your 40s and even 50s, if you haven't been able to express yourself creatively, you get a significant, that is absolutely, you drop your pencil, and you look at the person and you ask them, how could you be creative if you were given a chance? And that's always the doorway out.
Well, is creativity, what's the relation of creativity to what I want? Are they the same?
They can be. They're just not. They don't feel the same sometimes. Like, I'm not an artist. I don't feel like a creative person. But we're all given a tablespoon of salt, Will, and it's just dashed on us at different times and in different amounts. I do have creativity just as much as any other person. It's just expressed differently. My own particular creativity is expressed through abstraction and being able to work in a spatial world of data and information and facts and personal history and synchronize things into a model and into an action plan. It's not necessarily something that comes out on paper. I'm not that good at drawing, and I don't have good, I just don't have good hand-eye coordination for art and sculpting and things like that. I'm a good writer, but again, more on a technical side, taking an abstract idea and synthesizing it, condensing it into something. So it doesn't look like art and creativity, but it is creative, and it makes me feel creative. And so I think that there's a bit of a stigma associated with the words art and creativity, because we assume wrongly that that means we have to produce something beautiful. And beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and is actually, when you're looking at a person's creativity, beauty is in the eye of the person creating. And the heart of the person creating. So if we can access where we feel the most creative or where we're recognized the most, even if it's just in our friend group or social group or family group where they say, gosh, you're always so good at that. I love it when you do that. Or, oh, let's ask her to do that. Or, oh, let's get him to do that. Those are the clues that a person needs to be looking for if they don't think they're creative. They need to be looking at those ways that they're expressing themselves that society is saying, yeah, that's where their creativity is.
Now, there's a subtle difference there that I want to talk about. The praise for somebody who is thoroughly enjoying something, mm-hmm. versus the identification of, oh, you're good at that, and we need, so would you, right?
Ouch. Well, the strong candidate will say thanks but no thanks, and know that their skill sets have a marketplace somewhere else.
You know, you did such a good job on that Excel spreadsheet for the Girl Scout cookie sale. We need a treasurer for the soccer team. Would you do that?
Oh man, I'm not your girl. If that's not your thing, don't take the compliment of being asked to do it as a reason to take action and do it. Because here's why, Will. Aptitudes are capacities to build skills. They're God-given birthright capacities. You and I could take a math class and spend the same amount of study time, the same amount of hours, and I promise you would come out ahead of me. I just don't have the aptitude for it. So even if I did okay on that one project, me or anybody else, and they were then asked to take that and leverage it into a larger, more impactful work task, you shouldn't take it. It's not, somebody else will always be better than you. So do yourself a favor by not being miserable, and do the company a favor by helping them recognize that there's somebody else out there with better skills for that.
Well, and I want to push it even further. There's somebody out there who really wants to do it.
Loves it.
Yes. And when we talk about the tool that I give companies called Delegate and Elevate. Now, that was that four-quadrant rectangle I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And what we want people to do is identify those things that they really don't want to do, even if they're very good at it. Mm-hmm. And then to delegate that, now not to somebody who doesn't want to do it, but find somebody who loves to do that and is good at it.
Yeah.
And invite them to do it, which then frees me up to do the things that I really want to do.
Yep, bingo. That's the key. Or find somebody who loves to do it and ask them to find somebody who might love to do it. Because wanting to do something is one thing. Having experience doing it is another. If you are somebody who likes to do something and has a lot of experience, you're highly motivated to do that. It's your job, in my opinion, in the company to find others like you who maybe aren't occupationally aligned or perfectly skills aligned. And every time you've ever asked them, they've had a little bit of experience, but they've been really good at it. They've got a knack for it. They seem to like it. That's a professional development skill set. That's a hidden gem. So if we can help companies identify those people who probably, if given the chance, if given a wider exposure to a certain work activity, would love it and would develop a great skill set, a wonderful ability to do it, by all means, give that person that running room.
Well, it seems to me then that companies at best, and when we talk about company, we're talking about a group of people, right?
Yes.
Supreme Court judgments aside, corporations are people. Companies are a group of people, and they come together, hopefully, because they share common values. They enjoy being together. Then it seems to me that there's two things that they do all the time. One is they get things done, right?
Right.
All right. Now, the second thing they can be doing, and in great companies I see them doing, is they're continually learning how to get them done better.
Yes.
So they're focusing on getting things done and spending at least equal amount of time on learning how to get things done better.
Usually more efficiently, yes.
Well, more efficiently, less resistance, less more alignment would create less resistance. Having the right people in the right seats, learning how to, what I find is simple things like learning how to get things done that I said I would get done in a week, getting it done. Learning how to, take on projects or obstacles that I'm going to remove in 90 days and learning how to get that done. Mm-hmm. That helps me to move toward my, 10-year target or 30-year, whatever that big goal is. If I can learn how to get things done in a week that I said I would do, and I can learn how to get things done in 90 days that I said I would do, I can get what I really want out of this.
Absolutely. That's intrinsic motivation. And the pathways that you're talking about creating in a company are exactly what's going to continue to magnify and stimulate intrinsic motivation in a worker. Forward to be creating and to be producing and to be making the work environment a nicer place, both for the internal employees and the external clients and then the vendors and suppliers as well. You definitely want an engaged, intrinsically motivated group of people to be spreading and sharing in that culture.
Well, and now, I get the sense that you work with individuals more than companies. Is that?
I do.
Okay.
I do some corporate work, but the primary focus of my training is for the purpose of the individual.
And so my passion right now is with companies.
Right.
And what I tell companies is, as you move through this process, you're going to find two problems with people. One, you're going to find some people who are you know, who are really fit the values and the culture of the company like a glove. I mean, they're just wonderful to be around. But unfortunately, they really aren't doing their job. They can't do the job. They don't have the capacity to do the job. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've got 40 or 50 seats, then you've got the opportunity to move them around into a different seat. But you can't let them stay in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you're going to have people who are excellent at doing the job. I mean, they are doing the job better than anybody you've ever seen, but they don't fit the culture of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them that that's going to be a real problem for you because they will chip away at the company and eventually kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you, when you see that going on with individuals, what do you tell them?
Well, those are two different career problems. The first one is a skills alignment, misalignment, and the second one is a work style misalignment or a values misalignment, as you're calling it. Any misalignment in career, again, must be continually defined and removed, in my opinion. So what I tell people is skills first. Go with work you feel highly capable of doing and that is highly enjoyable to you. Because if you present yourself as a candidate in an interview who knows what they want to do, knows the name of the job, knows the skill set, and either has it or is building it and is enjoying it along the way and wants to be producing in that type of role, then that's where that conversation can come that you mentioned earlier about, do we fit? Can we get along? Are we the type of people who have the same kind of expectations when assignments are handed out, when clients call in and request this, when a meeting is, you know, comes to order and everybody's supposed to weigh in? Do we have the same comfort level? Do we have the same goals? Do we have them at the same level? Some companies have more aggressive goals than others. Some are more into, you know, their pillars or mission, value statement. You know, companies should have those and operate by those, and that those should be guideposts that help form the culture, and that the culture is managed to that, so that the skills are applied for the same reasons at the right time, and everybody understands what's going on. I've worked in companies that are aligned and misaligned, and it's very different, and it's very unique, and it's very fun to see it all come together. So what I tell my clients is, you know, just be continually focusing on making sure that you're moving forward with a career path of high interest to you, that is going to develop a strong skill set that you enjoy employing, and then find a company you love.
Right. Now, this whole notion that we've inherited from someplace, I don't know where it comes from. It has something to do with judgment in a negative sense of getting fired. Now, you know, I grew up in South Texas and then spent a lot of time in Massachusetts on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you know, getting fired, I mean, these generally people on the East Coast would get into a position, they'd stay there for life.
Yeah.
And if they were fired, that was traumatic. That was earth-shattering. And that was, I carried that with me. And you know, there have been times when I was misaligned. I wasn't misaligned. They were misaligned, right? But there was misalignment. And there were times when I was asked to leave. I took that very, very seriously and personally. And then I learned about what I call the Hollywood model.
Mm-hmm.
You know the Hollywood model?
Mm-mm.
Well, all right, think for a moment. Somebody has an idea about a movie. All right, they go out and they find a producer, and they find people who will support it. When they get the money together, then they begin to hire the gaffers and the, you know, the person who's going to find the, you know, run the project, the camera, somebody who's going to be the caterer. All of these positions are that you see them at the end of the, you know, when they have the crawl at the end of the movie. All these positions, they're all there. They hire all of those people. And when the movie is over, those people Now, you could say they lose their job, but they don't lose the job.
They over.
Completed the job.
Yeah.
All right, now, this is the model. So when that job is over, it's not like I got fired. It's like that was over. I'm moving on to the next one. And by the way, I should probably be thinking about what my next one is, 75% into the first one.
True.
All right, now, if you adopt the Hollywood model, you're never fired. You're simply,
that's a great way to think about it.
You're simply moving on to the next project.
Right, right.
Now, by the way, that's what I tell people about retirement, too. There's no such thing as retirement. You just forget that. That's a fantasy that was put together back by manufacturers in Detroit in the 20s and 30s. There's no retirement.
My field would agree with you wholeheartedly that we go back to the beginning and we start the cycle all over again of exploring what we want to do with our souls and establishing what we want to do with our souls, but just in a non-work context.
Well it's like there's you got two choices. It's either what's my next project or death. Right? I mean, because the universe is very efficient and highly productive. Good stewardship. If the cells aren't being used productively, the universe tends to say, I'll take those and put them someplace else. Thank you.
Oh, dear. Get busy. Everybody get busy.
Well, I don't know if it's get busy, but it's get intense. Have an intention. What are you doing? Where are you serving yourself and others?
True.
What's your purpose? True.
Well, and I think that work has a lot to do with how we see ourselves. In your earlier example of the stereotypical gentleman who's worked for 20 years in a company and is fired and it's a traumatic experience, the hierarchy of needs have very much been fulfilled by his work environment. And his work environment and his status at work becomes a very big part of how he sees himself, his own identity. There are a lot of people out there who know they have to work, but they don't see themselves as a worker. They see themselves as a member of their family and their friends, and they like these other activities. They go to concerts, and they have volunteer work that they do, and they just work. But their identity is made up of more of their social and familial interactions. Work is a component of their identity. In your example, it's the opposite extreme, where work is a significant component of the whole identity of self. And when we have any shift in our identity, we have a loss. And we lose part of the support system of our hierarchy of needs, whether it's a group or a feeling of belonging or a paycheck to give us, you know, access to, you know, support and food and shelter and all of that, transportation. If that becomes elongated, that can create an incredible trauma. But the Hollywood model is a wonderful way to help the individual recognize that the stop that they were just on is really just a project. I like how you describe that. And their identity doesn't have to crumble. We just need to go out in search of a new environment where it belongs. It can belong again. We all want to belong.
Well, to the extent, when you're working with people, do you ever help them to see that they are their own business, even though they might be getting a paycheck from a company, but they really are their own business?
Oh, for sure, yes. The whole overarching goal of career counseling is to help an individual become self-directed in their career, and any career counselor would agree with me. In order to help a person become and truly feel self-directed, you have to have skills confidence. You have to have a relatively clear picture of at least a channel. It doesn't have to be a pinpoint, but a channel in which you belong. And that very much is a different perspective than somebody who's hanging on to a job as a passive player versus somebody in the scenario I'm laying out, somebody who is actively participating and actively engaging and actively pursuing work, the art of work, their purpose extended to society in remuneration for a paycheck. That's what work is. It is taking who you are on the inside and channeling it occupationally into a way that can help society, because that's what we all want to do. We want to help, but then getting paid for it. You have to do it in a useful way.
And now, in every 90 days, I set goals for me and as in my company, we all put that together and say these are the things we want to accomplish as a company, and then that becomes, you know, what our year plan and what's our 3-year picture going to be. And one of those pieces of that 3-year plan is for me is that I will be delivering my message. And when I looked at that last week as we were just reviewing it, that's not just a verbal, it's not just written. It really has to do with the message. That's what we're talking about today, is the messages that fulfillment of oneself can be in the context that generates money.
Absolutely.
And whether it comes from this particular company or not, is not the true, you know, that's not your evaluation. It's, am I fulfilling my purpose? And then how do I find a place where, you know, I can support myself or earn enough to be able to do the contributions that I want to make and those kinds of things, right?
Right, absolutely. And I think people misunderstand what purpose really means. Purpose, if you think about the purpose of a screwdriver, it's to fix something. It's to help something else. A screwdriver does not exist to be a screwdriver. A screwdriver exists to help and function and be of use. So an inner purpose is not like a feeling and a passion and all of that stuff that they talk about. An inner purpose, connecting your purpose to the outside world, is more along the lines of how you can be useful. So continually evaluating that is absolutely the road to the paycheck, so to speak.
Well, you know, as we come to the end of our conversation, we're coming perilously close to seeing models like Jesus and Muhammad and Moses. I mean, the stories we hear of them are not about them so much as they are about their service.
And career counselors know that there is a spiritual connection in the career counseling room, and a reason that a person walks into their office at that time in their career path to pursue a new path that is slightly augmented or adjusted from where they are so that they can get that magic that you're talking about. There is no question in my mind, Will, that there is a spiritual component to the proper alignment of self and career.
Now, there, I would imagine that there is almost always an element of transformation when people get it.
Yes, it's beautiful.
That must be very fulfilling for you.
It's the most amazing job. I can't believe it. It's calling it a job, it doesn't give it justice. It's wonderful, and part of the reason why I have Career Lab, to bring these tools and these transformations, as you call them, to the masses. Everybody in America deserves to have the feeling of fitting in and being useful and getting paid.
Well, we get together with the what we call the visionary and the integrator, the on the leadership team regularly for my companies every quarter. And I'm thinking that at some point we might want to invite you in and let you talk to them about the role that they fill as part of the leadership team in helping people to find that kind of fulfillment.
Fulfillment in themselves, in their families, in their communities, in their companies, and to be perfectly honest with you, in the country. We have a huge skills gap. If we closed it, we would have added $2.5 billion or something huge like that to our GDP. I don't know this year's number. That was a number a couple years ago. And every person who isn't working to their full potential and their full useful purpose,
right,
is contributing to that horrible skills gap that is the Achilles heel of this company, of this country, and every company has something they can do to close it.
That's right.
That's
exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is that those tools that I use, and then 250 other people around the country who are helping to implement the what we call the entrepreneurial operating system, the EOS.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We are helping companies be the best, and in doing that, we help people be the best.
Absolutely. When you connect people to the bigger vision and their patriotic sense of, you know, being an American, and that their work is more than just what they're doing at their desk, that it's really helping the health of their families and communities and country, then you get a collective that really is a wonderful thing. I love that message. We share that.
All right. Well, Julie, this has been wonderful, absolutely wonderful. How can people get in touch with you if they wanted to?
Yes. Well, please hit my website, www.careerlabnow.com. You can find out the next Career Lab meetings. You can get you can register to be a caller on my podcast, Career Lab. You can download some wonderful resources that are handwritten by me, tons of samples and examples and different ways to think about career very inexpensively. You can ask me a question. So thank you for the opportunity to be on your show today, Will.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And so it's www.careerlab.now.
CareerLabNow.com.
Oh, CareerLabNow.com.
Correct.
Excellent.
CareerLab on iTunes, yep.
All right, super. Thank you so much. And this has been another example of how businesses and people thrive in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.